22 minutes past the hour on a Tuesday morning, and we look forward to Tuesdays in part because Dr. Don Clark joins us during this hour. Don is a biochemist, a vineyard, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and we talk about things like creation and faith and science, and today, no exception. Interesting topic today, Don, listening to butterflies, really?
Oh, yes, listening to butterflies. Actually, it's listening to God's marvelous creation. In this case, and so butterflies are just one example of his marvelous creation. Especially, you know, the butterflies, of course, go through a metamorphosis, that is a change in their appearance. They're, you know, start off as worms and caterpillars and things like that, and then. You know, everybody understands that they build a cocoon, and one of the earliest science projects that perhaps you do when you're a little child is to try to find a cocoon of a butterfly and then watch it open up and turn into a beautiful, caterpillar, and then watch it turn into a beautiful butterfly.
Yeah, I'm looking at a gorgeous photo. I don't even know what kind of a butterfly this is, but it's not the monarch. It's must be a tropical or an African butterfly, some exotic land, because I don't see them here. What inspired the topic today is an essay from By Design, brought to us by the Discovery Organization, and they start out with Psalm 19. I thought I would just read a little bit of it, because it really is a proper orientation to the talk this morning. This is from Psalm 19, reputed to be a psalm of David, so this goes back. We're looking at 800 to 900 B.C. here. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. That says a lot about science and about how science really represents just a small part of our entire intellect, our entire sensory apparatus, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. I mean, one of the first things that you do, what you should do in science is observe, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't come up with a hypothesis or a guess as to how things work unless you observe how things work. Leonardo da Vinci, he observed the nature around him and was able to invent several different things, obviously, based on what he observed. He observed birds, for example, for hours. He observed their flights. He would go up on a mountain and just observe the beauty and the grace of birds, and then he got the idea, well, you know, maybe I can make a flying machine based on the wings of the birds and how they're curved and how they move their wings. And so he went about doing that. Of course, he designed many other things.
He was an
engineer
too, but there's a point I'd like to make. He saw beauty and he saw function. Science serves the function but rarely addresses the beauty. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I think so, and it tries to model what is being, you know, observed. Obviously through mathematics primarily using mathematics to try to model different things that we observe, whether it be electricity going through a wire or heat transfer through a window or through a building. See if you can come up with some type of mathematical representation for the physical things that we see.
There's the corollary, a mathematical representation. That's something we can work with, something we can use to analyze and maybe even predict. And so mathematics can be essential toward putting together a hypothesis and then a theory. But if you look at a sunset and you marvel at it, and you attempt to explain it by water particles in the air and dust in the atmosphere, and the sun's low angle through the atmosphere, you kind of lose something, don't you? Is that what we really see in the sunset?
Oh, yeah, you lose a lot. I mean, you can explain why the light, for example, you know, looks more orange and reddish as the sun, you know, sets further and further in the west. And then we can go about explaining it based on, well, you know, the short wavelengths of light, the bluer rays of the light that's coming from the sun are being scattered by the particles, dust particles in the air. And so, you know, the light curves around the Earth for a while, and the only rays that you're seeing are the longer wavelengths, which are the oranges and the reds, you know, and the lower it gets, the more red it gets. So we can explain that. We understand the physics behind it. But it's, you know, it's been the inspiration. A sunset's been the inspiration of many of afternoons, just, you know, sitting out on your porch, perhaps, and just watching it set. And I think God, you know, created, you know, things like that just to, for our enjoyment, you know, really, and the beauty. Because, you know, that's something that you really can't explain from a scientific point of view. Why are some of the creatures and the physical things that we see around us, why create it beautiful? Why is a flower, for example, beautiful? It's so beautiful, in fact, that we want to cut them and bring them inside and put them as a centerpiece on our tables, or even in this case, the butterfly wings. Why is that so beautiful?
Is that a question that science even asks anymore? Why? Or are they concerned with just how?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I don't think that question is to, you know, why the beauty, because science can't answer that question as to why it's beautiful. I mean, we understand that, oh, you know, butterflies have these dots on the back of their, you know, on the back of their wings that you see. And so when a butterfly is kind of sitting on a branch or something, its wings are open, and you know, the dots represent eyes, and so a predator would be frightened away, let's say, from the butterfly because of what it looks like. I mean, we could explain that, we could observe it, but it doesn't explain the beauty of the wings. It doesn't explain the color. It doesn't explain why, you know, everything is necessarily so symmetrical you know, so beautiful. And and the same way with the petals, you know, of a flower. They're arranged in such a way that we have the golden rule as to the number of petals and how they're arranged around, you know, in a flower, and the leaves around the branch
Fibonacci sequence
of a tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And proportion and the golden rectangle and all. And that brings another question. If I, going back to sunsets, if I witness a gorgeous sunset, and I've seen a few of them, and I take out my camera and I take a picture, and I look at that picture the next day or the next week or the next month or a year from now, and I say, oh, I remember that sunset, but the picture doesn't really capture it. It's something you experience live in person for real that carries the power. And you can remember that, and you can derive pleasure from it, but the photograph, you know, I never look at it again. I just never do. Because
right.
what's in my mind, what's in my memory is so much more powerful.
Right, because it's it engulfs you. You know, the real thing actually just engulfs you, and it becomes a panoramic experience that you can't get with a with a camera. All, you know, cameras these days, of course, have the panoramic feature where you can just scan across, but you can't get the whole experience by just taking an image. And sometimes, you know, we can't get the whole experience even by painting. If we were to paint a sunset, for example, I think it might turn out a little bit better than the photograph, because you can put expression in your painting, but it's still not the same thing as experiencing it. Or going out to the desert, for example, where there's no light, and then looking up in the sky and you know, realizing that there are thousands, if not billions, of stars out there that you can't see in the city. in our experience in the city, we've lost so much of the beauty just in the night sky, because you only see a very small fraction of the number of dots of light there are, in space. And then you go out in the desert and you can actually see the Milky Way and say, wow, it's like a cloud of light, streaking through the sky. I wonder who created that. That is the response that God wants from us.
Precisely.
I wonder who created that.
And there's Psalm 19 in a capsule. The article talks about the atheist Richard Dawkins and some of his observations. Richard Dawkins has a wonderful phrase called the magic of reality. That's what he said one time. And he said, biology is so astonishing that its power to move us once we pay attention never goes away. So the key for us really is to pay attention, to be aware beyond the analytical points of a butterfly or a sunset or anything else. There are other things about being human that allow us to sense and to understand and to know beyond mere analysis. Is that accurate?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's interesting that he would make that statement because, of course, he believes that everything just happened to fall together. And, as Psalm 19 declares, I mean, it's not only the heavens that declare the glory of God. It's everything about creation, biology included. Biology is very, very complex. And when we go to delve inside a cell, we find, just complexity upon complexity upon complexity. And just looking at the gross features that you can see from outside the organism, in this case, the butterfly, and we see things that we just can't explain away. And for him to actually say that, there is a magic about looking at biology and just experiencing it. And then on the other hand, to say, no, there's no creator. I mean, his premise with that, there's something wrong with
that.
There's
a myopia because he uses the word magic, as in a trick. But it's more than that, and that's the threshold that he does not cross.
No, he won't cross it because of basic philosophy and basic, if for example, and we've talked about this many times before, if that butterfly was created by a marvelous creator, then that means that I must be accountable to that creator. That I'm no longer just accountable to myself. Mm-hmm. So it becomes, it turns from something that is selfish to something that we are supposed to do when we observe these things, and that is to worship the Creator. We don't worship those things that are created, which is kind of the feeling that you get with his statement, that he is worshiping the creation. But you actually take that and say, wow, what a wonderful and marvelous creator that we do have in all of this. So it's it's different philosophy, different point of view, but the creation is to bring us to the creator. When we see our dog, when we come into the house and our dog is wagging its tail and it's so glad to see us, that should bring to mind the marvelous creator. He didn't leave us alone. I mean, yes, he made us a helpmate, which hopefully is our wives, but it's the creation that he's also given us for our enjoyment and for our pleasure, so that he might look down and say, hey, there's my son, or there's my daughter. I'm they're the apple of my eye. Instead, folks like Dawkins mock at that and say there is no creator. We have no evidence for creation. And so therefore, everything just came together in a primordial soup somewhere. And that primordial soup is the confusion that is in his mind.
Well, the key realization, I think, is to know by observing things like butterflies and sunsets and young children and the beauties around us, and those things that speak to us without voices, is that we are not, after all, the top of the food chain as human beings. This is not the epitome of creation that we're living in, and there is something bigger, and yes, accountable to, but there's something out there that's bigger than we can even conceive of. And just that's like the first step to really starting to understand things, isn't it?
Oh, well, yes, it is, and that's why the Psalm 19 started off, the heavens declare the glory of God, and all of his creation really declares the glory. And, you know, he put part of the beauty is part of God's beauty. And all of these things that we, you know, that we see around us, we can marvel and say, wow, how intricately that is designed, and point us back to the Creator to show us that the Creator loves us so much and cared for us so much, he gave us all of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's the story, or the, not the story, but that's the point that we should arrive at when we see and marvel at God's creation, whether it be the beautiful sunset in the afternoon, or whether it's, a beautiful butterfly. It's always fun to go to these, butterfly museums, where they're really not museums because they're growing butterflies, if you will, mm-hmm. and the butterflies are flying all around us, and it's just a lot of fun to do that. But you know, to imagine that the Creator gave us all of this as a way of saying, I love you.
And the systems, the complexity, the studies, the theories, the arguments, the contention. Now, here's one comment from a geneticist at the University of Chicago, and he says, what you guys need to do is just get out of the way of the evidence. No one needs a complicated argument when the systems themselves are so astonishing and elegant. But you got to go beyond the math and the analysis and understand that listening to silence, in other words, the voice of butterflies, is an astonishing thing. And you can learn a lot by doing so. You engage yourself fully, not just intellectually. So, yeah, it's good information all. Don, thank you very much. This is kind of I kind of threw you a curve with this topic. This is a little different than what we normally get into, but I wanted to address this because there's so many more dimensions to knowledge and understanding than just pure analysis and theories and proofs. And there's some things you know without proof. It thinks you look and you observe and you feel, whether it's emotional or spiritual or all the above. And you learn about something that's bigger than all of us put together. So, Don, thanks very much. Don, again, a member of the board of Creation Moments. They've got a wonderful website. CreationMoments.com is the website. You can learn a lot there about the science that speaks to biblical creation. And yes, there's a mountain of science that says it didn't happen by accident. And it's worth a visit. CreationMoments.com. Don from Garden Valley in Texas, hopefully, I just read the long-term weather forecast. You folks are supposed to have a warmer and drier than normal winter. Is that a good thing or a bad thing when it comes to grapes?
Well, we need to build up the moisture in the soil again, and so having a dry winter, that may not be the best thing, because we had so much rain earlier in the year that as soon as we finished the harvest, the rain stopped.
Be good to freeze out all those bugs too, I imagine. So,
well, we definitely need the freezes, that's okay. For sure.
Don, take care. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Okay, very good.
See you, Don.
You have a good week as well.